Good afternoon. Last case for today is United States v. Becker. Appellant ready to argue?
We are, sir.
Government?
Yes, sir.
Appellant may argue.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Chief Judge Stuckey, and may it please the Court. I'm Captain Marcus Fulton, and along with Lieutenant Daniel Moore, I represent the appellant in this case, Lieutenant Craig Becker. Your Honor, I respectfully request to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Granted.
This case concerns the deference that our system affords trial judges. Trial judges are given broad discretion to determine what evidence is reliable and important to a ruling. When reviewing a factual finding, an appellate court must review the evidence in a light most favorable to the party that prevailed at trial. And having reviewed the evidence in that light, it may only disturb a factual finding if it is clearly erroneous. In this case, both the lower court and the government have avoided that strict standard. The government has its own slate of facts that it prefers to the military judges. This case presents an opportunity for this court, and apparently there is a need for this court, to reinforce the importance of giving the trial judge the deference he's due under the law. This court should take that opportunity and affirm the military judge's ruling. Neither United States versus Comiso nor United States versus Solomon upended the abuse of discretion standard as this court and every appellate court has used it for decades. I'm going to start with United States versus Solomon because, unlike Comiso, Solomon and United States versus Becker involve review of a factual finding. Nothing in Solomon purports to change the clearly erroneous standard. In fact, Solomon explicitly relies on the clearly erroneous standard. And so we think that one of the tasks before this court today is going to be to reconcile language in Solomon and related language in United States versus Comiso that says that a military judge errs if he fails to consider important evidence, or to use the words from United States versus Comiso, fails to consider important facts. How do you know if evidence is so important that a military judge errs by failing to write about it in his opinion? And we think that the answer to that question is actually found in United States versus Solomon itself, at the bottom of page 180, the top of page 181. What we think that Solomon stands for.
Well, wait a minute. Are you admitting that that's the standard?
Your Honor, we don't think there's any difference between
failing to include important facts is the same thing as not abusing your abusing discretion. Or being clearly erroneous.
Right. It's, Your Honor, it's not our position that this court applied the wrong standard in Solomon. We just think that a confusion has developed over what it means to say that a fact is important in light of the clearly erroneous standard. And I guess if I were to suggest a way to define it that might be helpful, I would say that as the term is used.
Maybe I took the wrong thing from your brief. But I thought in your brief you were strongly suggesting that that was the wrong standard.
I think it's been read wrong. The lower court
it's
has
been read wrong.
Yes, Your Honor. The lower court's understanding of what it means to ignore an important fact or ignore important evidence is right off the rails. They've read it to expand their scope of review under 62.
That's two different things. It's one thing to say this is the standard. It's another thing to say that in a 62 appeal, you can't engage in fact-finding CCA.
Right.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so the scope review problem is certainly its own problem that we think this court should address. But we think that the lower court is also misreading it as a standard of review that's separate from clearly erroneous. We don't think that anything in Solomon should be read to have watered down or departed from the clearly erroneous standard. In fact, this court relied on clearly erroneous in United States versus Solomon. So if we were to suggest an interpretation of what it means to ignore a important evidence or important fact, we would suggest that in the context of a factual finding, it means that an important fact would be a fact that is so overdeterminative of a fact at issue that the military judge's failure to reconcile it leaves the finding clearly erroneous. It's just too...
Like clear evidence of an alibi.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And we can look at the what that important fact was in United States versus Solomon. It was a uncontradicted, unexplained, or unreconciled, I should say, police report that said that the accused was in the, in police custody during the entire time frame this alleged break-in could have taken place. And the military judge, whistles past that. And the result of that, you can say both that he ignored important evidence, because he surely did that, and the result of having ignored that evidence left his finding clearly erroneous. There was just no way to reconcile the fact that he's in police custody with the military judge's finding that he could have come in through the window and broken in. And so with that standard in mind, that strict clearly erroneous standard, we just respectfully invite the court's attention to the kinds of matters that the government suggests makes this finding of fact clearly erroneous.
Before you get, I'm sorry. Go ahead,
John. No, I didn't have a question. Go ahead, John.
Before you get into your list of factors, I noticed, and wasn't clear to me in your brief, you make a distinction, or you seem to try to make a distinction between ignoring important facts and important evidence. It wasn't clear to me what you meant by striking a distinction, thusly.
For purposes of reviewing a finding of fact, I'm not sure that that's a distinction that's necessarily worth making, as long as we understand that we're talking about evidence, right? We're not giving the lower court carte blanche to find new facts that weren't found by the military judge. That's clear from me from Article 62 and from United States versus Gore. Commisso is a little bit my speculation as to why Commisso is written the way it is because Commisso involves an error of law that caused the military judge to not ask the right questions. Commisso keeps going back to things that the military judge could have found out but didn't. Solomon is a factual case just like this one. And so I would say that the question is, did this military judge ignore evidence that was so important that it just can't be reconciled with his finding of fact? And respectfully, that's just not the case. When you look at page 20 of the government's answer in this case, there was five things, and none of them are in the category of Solomon Heck having somebody in police custody. They have this...
Can I go back before you go on to the specific factual aspects here? So I just want to make sure I grasp your argument. You're talking about how important facts should be considered at CCA and so forth. Are you saying that only if this court in this decision cabins Commisso, Solomon the way you want, that's the only way you can prevail?
No, Your Honor.
You're saying that regardless of how it was done, you still would prevail based on the consideration of the important facts?
Yes, Your Honor. One can scarcely imagine any permutation of the abuse of discretion standard that should result in overturning this military judge's finding of fact. We simply invite the court's attention to this language from Solomon and Commisso because we think that it's caused confusion in the court below, and that confusion resulted in erroneously setting aside the military judge's finding. The first item that the government suggests makes the military judge's finding clearly erroneous is Lieutenant Becker's trip to the Belgian police station. Bear in mind that when we look at this evidence, we have to review it in light most favorable to the party that prevailed at trial. That's Lieutenant Becker. And when you look at this visit to the police station, there's simply nothing about it that speaks to the only thing we care about in this case, which is Lieutenant Becker's potential intent to suppress later testimony. He went to the police station because he feared conflict with his departing wife over moving. She was inviting people in his apartment to move things that he didn't want those people there. And to prevent problems, he went preemptively to the police office, and he sought their advice as to Belgian law. He got their advice. He explained why he was concerned. He said, my wife drinks too much. She gets emotional. They said, call us. And that's all that trip to the police station stands for, especially right in light most favorable to Lieutenant
Becker. Well, that's all it stands for, or is his preemptive strike, saying, if you hear something from this woman, ignore it, because she's nuts. And she's a wino. I mean, can it be seen in that light?
There are a lot of different ways I suppose one could look at it.
Well, but you're saying it has absolutely nothing to do with silencing her. And what I'm saying is it doesn't, or is it simply an effort to say, well, why, she can say all she wants, but I will try my best to make sure the cops ignore it by telling them in advance that she's nuts.
You know, I guess I'd have to say
or
that...
Or she's an alcoholic, ignore her blabbing.
I don't think it's too uncommon for men who are dealing with a volatile marital situation to go preemptively to the police so they don't get in trouble. I think that this is... You know, certainly read in the light most favorable to Lieutenant Becker. There's really no reason to think that this trip to the police station is anything other than what it purports to be on its Government Exhibit 42 on page 2. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. Fulton, I think your argument is basically that, hey, look, someone else might look at this fact and interpret it differently, but the fact of the matter is the standard is that the reviewing authority must review the facts and interpret them in the light most favorable to the prevailing party.
Yes, Your Honor.
Apparently the accused prevailed at trial on this issue.
Correct, Your Honor. It is certainly possible to take the five facts that the government has posited and chain them together in, frankly, what seems like a rather fanciful narrative. You have this purchase of wine, and this is supposed to have subdued Mrs. Becker, and it's supposed to have been laced with Zolpidem that Lieutenant Becker is supposed to have stolen from his boss. It all, Your Honor, in any light, it all falls apart. There's no alcohol in her bloodstream at the time of her death.
Okay, but why is this relevant? The issue before us has to do with the forfeiture by wrongdoing.
Yes, sir.
So you're getting into things, it seems to me, that will be highly relevant at the court-martial, but what's the relevance before this court when we're dealing with this narrow issue about the prior assault?
Thank you, Your Honor. It's so easy in this case to get sidetracked into talking about things that don't matter to the only issue that this court should care about at this stage, and that's the potential... The allegation that whatever motive Lieutenant Becker had at the time, there was some reason that he thought that she was going to testify against him and that he took some act with a specific intent to prevent future testimony. And, you know, I guess I would start by saying that the five things that the government has tried to lace together to try and show a narrative, that narrative, in a light most favorable to the government, might show that Lieutenant Becker might have murdered his wife. Even in that light, it has nothing to do with the one issue that we care about here, which is the specific intent to prevent testimony. If there are no...
Counsel, may I ask a question? It's sort of a technical question. With the forfeiture by wrongdoing exception, there are two elements, and the military judge made a finding only with respect to the second element, concluded it was not necessary to address the first element. The CCA, though, did disagreed with him and found both elements in favor of the government. If we agree with your position with respect to the intent element, do we need to say anything about the other element?
Your Honor, you needn't say anything about it, and respectfully, nothing should be said about elements that have no longer have any bearing on the evidentiary issue in front of this court or the trial.
Let me make it more specific. Are you asking us also to, in some way, undo the purported finding of fact by the CCA on the first element?
We're asking this court to. The reasons the CCA opinion should be set aside in its entirety would take me another 20 minutes to discuss. It should be it should be set aside, but one of those reasons would certainly be because the CCA seems to have weighed in on the merits of a homicide case where it has no business being at this time. The Ninth Circuit said that in United States versus Johnson that, you know, one of the benefits of the Giles test, this two-pronged test, is it allows the judge to focus on the intent element and thereby disentangling himself from having to decide the case on its merits as an interlocutory matter. It's not an abuse of discretion to focus on the intent element. It's prudent judging, and this judge is a careful judge, and he focused on when he realized that the government wasn't going to meet its burden on the intent element, he wisely didn't opine on a lot of other things that were going to be before the court-martial.
But focusing on the technical point that Judge Maggs is raising, what are you asking this court to do? Should we simply ignore that finding? We're piercing the CCA opinion and simply say the military judge did that correctly? Or are you saying we need to, in some manner, refute what the CCA did here?
And Chief Justice Stuckey, if I could answer that question.
Answer the question.
We think that the CCA opinion should be set aside in its entirety. We would recommend specifically setting aside or repudiating that aspect of the opinion that goes beyond what was necessary to decide the case. We think the court should repudiate that portion of the opinion that goes beyond their scope of review. There's a lot to repudiate in that opinion, in our view, Your Honor.
But
following up on Judge Olson's question, we could save you 20 minutes by simply reminding ourselves that we're, as Judge Olson correctly stated, piercing through the CCA's opinion. We are reviewing the military judge directly, are we not, on a 62 appeal?
Yes, Your Honor. And I, to this point, I hadn't done a lot of deep thinking about what the fate is of a CCA opinion that's been reversed. And I guess in my mind, when it's gone, it's gone. I think that it probably, just as a jurisprudential matter, it probably would be a good idea for this court to comment on that opinion, because there are a lot of things that need to be addressed in that opinion. I can leave it at that. I'm not exactly sure exactly how this court is going to parse out. And
okay, that's what we get paid for.
Very well.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, sir.
Counsel for the government.
Good afternoon, Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, and may it please the court. I'm Major Carrie Friedewald, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Nick Gannon, I represent the United States. This court should affirm the lower court's finding that the military judge abused his discretion for two reasons. First, the military judge's ruling failed to account for critical facts in the record that show appellant acted with the intent to prevent the victim's testimony. And second, the lower court's impermissible fact-finding is separate from its permissible application of the abuse of discretion standard from Commisso.
Okay, now, I think both sides agree. The government concedes that the CCA shouldn't have done this, right? They should, you know, we're supposed to pierce the veil in these things, and they aren't supposed to engage in fact-finding, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So the government concedes that.
We do, Your Honor.
Okay. Then how do you get around that? I mean, I think you're trying, you know, I think number two of what you just said is your effort to get around it. So go ahead.
Well, Your Honor, I'll say I start by talking about Giles and why the military judge abused his discretion and the facts that he ignored in order to show how
But if they can't engage in fact-finding, then whether he abused his discretion or not, they can't find him for him.
Correct, Your Honor, and that's why the government asks that this court remand for a completed ruling and only affirm the portions of the lower court's opinion that find the abuse of discretion. The government's position is that...
and if we did that, do you win?
Your Honor, we do in the sense that the government would then have a completed ruling where the...
what's incomplete about this ruling? It seems to me that, if anything, it's too complete. The CCA went beyond the boundaries and did things it shouldn't ought to have done. And what's incomplete about it?
Your Honor, although the ruling on its face, the military judge's ruling on its face may look complete, it's what lays outside the ruling in the record that shows that...
You're talking about the military judge's ruling.
Yes, Your Honor.
I thought you were talking about CCA.
No, Your Honor, the military judge's ruling.
Okay, the military judge's ruling is incomplete insofar as it fails to take account of certain important facts.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Okay, but it's not the province of the CCA to dig up those facts or tell the judge what to do, because then I can't do it in this Article 62 venue. So where does that leave us?
Well, Your Honor, the government would suggest that the failure to consider critical facts test can be applied to a finding of fact in an Article 62 case, where the Court of Criminal Appeals is within its authority to review the entire record. And if the court is then firmly convinced that the judge erred in his finding when they look at the evidence that he did not consider, that is unacknowledged and unreconciled in the ruling, if they're firmly convinced that his finding is erroneous, then the remedy is to point out those facts and remand for the military judge to do the ruling again in light of those facts that he...
Well, is the remedy... I mean, I can understand if the... Maybe I'm just being stupid here. But if the remedy... I can see the remedy being, judge, you did it wrong, go back and do it again. But I'm having trouble with the remedy being, judge, you did it wrong because you left out facts 1 through 5. Now go back and do it again.
Your Honor, the facts that the military judge leaves out, I agree with my colleague that those must be determinative facts of the issue under the law. So when a military judge abuses his discretion in that manner, the Court of Criminal Appeals must bring to his attention what facts he needs to consider under the law. And here, the military judge failed to consider 3 critical facts in the record. The first, as my colleague...
Before you get there, I just want to make sure I understand. So this military judge, in reading the record, seems to have been very, very familiar with these facts. I think what Chief Judge Stuckey was getting at is something that I have concern about, too. CCA is not supposed to be a fact finder, and yet if the CCA then says, focus on these facts, why isn't that simply putting the CCA back into a fact finder role when it's clear the military judge already was aware of those facts, perhaps didn't factor them in, perhaps didn't reference them in terms of a ruling? How is that not the same thing as the CCA finding facts for the military judge to consider?
Your Honor, it is not the same as finding facts because the finding of fact represents the conclusion that's the result of the inferences from the underlying evidence. And here I would, the government offers that the military judge, we know from his ruling that he didn't consider these critical facts because on the footnote on page 2 of his ruling, he notes that the only evidence of motive that he found was of jealousy. That's directly contradicted by Appellant's report to Belgian police that what motivated him to make that report of her excess drinking was her statement that she could cause him problems.
I'm sorry, the only element of motive that they found was what?
The military judge only identified jealousy over her boyfriend.
Thank you.
But her statement, which my colleague neglected, what motivated Appellant to make the report to the police about her excessive drinking was that she told him she could cause him problems.
But couldn't that also be a statement interpreted that she would cause him problems at that moment for not allowing these people to help her move? Don't you have to make a further inference that she was talking about causing him legal problems or cause? I mean, isn't that a pretty big jump? And because that's a jump, can't the military judge, in his discretion, have considered that and rejected it as not being relevant to motive?
If that were the only piece of evidence, Your Honor, that perhaps could have been reconciled without mentioning in the ruling. But, Your Honor, I'll point to the second and third critical facts that he didn't reconcile was 2 days after the victim's death, an appellant's phone call with the victim's friend. It was on his mind, and he recounted to her the living nightmare that was caused by her report in 2013 of his assault.
But it seems to me that the military judge could interpret that in a different way. I'm a little bothered by a question that kind of comes on the tail of Judge Olson's, but it's not clear to me how you know when the military judge has ignored or not considered facts. Is it because he didn't include them in his findings, or is there some other way you can divine that question, the answer to that question?
Well, Your Honor, we don't think it's only the failure to include in the findings. The military judge doesn't need to list every single detail he reviewed, but when there is facts missing from his findings that under the law would be relevant to the test, to finding intent under Giles, those demand consideration, and especially when those are dispositive facts, as the government poses here.
Do you believe that those are dispositive and can be interpreted no other way? Not you, but the government?
Your Honor, in cases like People v. Peterson in the Supreme Court of Illinois, look to both direct and circumstantial evidence to discern intent under Giles. And People v. Peterson said that it can be an upcoming civil proceeding, not just a criminal proceeding, and that the motivation need only be in part to silence the victims as a witness. So applying case law like that, and that's certainly not the only court to hold those things, applying that to these facts here, her statement that she can cause him problems, and then shortly after the victim's death, his recounting of the living nightmare and him telling the victim's friend that he didn't want to tell his children that their stepmother was dead because of its effect on his child custody hearing. That all shows that that's the window into his subjective intent through his own statements. And that shows that contrary to the military judge's ruling on page 3, the past events, her report in 2013, the living nightmare it caused him, was on his mind. And especially when you look at what my colleague calls the fanciful chain of events, what started the chain of events, and as Chief Judge Stuckey, you noted, his report to the police that in the government's view he is looking to discredit any future statement she might make, that was motivated by her telling him she can cause him problems.
Aren't those, I guess I'll stop beating this horse. He looks like he's dying anyway. But I guess I'm still at a loss to agree with you that what you've cited as determinative facts are in fact determinative. I mean, it seems to me they're all things that could be interpreted otherwise. And if we're in the world of discretion afforded a trial judge, why can't the trial judge interpret them differently to the point where he does not see the necessity to include them in his findings? It doesn't necessarily mean he didn't consider them. He considered them, rejected them, and moved on.
Well,
under his possible interpretation of those statements.
Well, Your Honor, it's not clear from his ruling that
if it's not clear, then don't we assume that he followed the law and found the facts he needed?
Your Honor,
isn't that what discretion is all about?
In this case, this court cannot owe the military judge that deference because of that he noted in his ruling that he only found the motive of jealousy and that this evidence contradicts that. We cannot assume that he evaluated the evidence in that light, Your Honor. And that's why it's the government's position that this needs to be remanded for a completed ruling, not only for the intent prong of the Giles test, but also, Judge Maggs, as you noted, for the first prong, for whether he caused the witnesses the victim's unavailability. So on remand.
You're saying a finding needs to be made on that point? Why? It's a conjunctive test, not disjunctive. If one of the elements or factors isn't there, then why isn't game over? Why does the military judge have to address the first part?
Your Honor, the government's position is not that he abused his discretion by choosing to resolve on the intent prong, only that the ruling requires completion on both prongs on remand. And the government, it's certainly the government's position that the only permissible view of the evidence on intent is that he held the requisite intent. And then, so in that case, to complete the forfeiture by wrongdoing exception under Giles, the military judge needs to make findings on the unavailability prong.
The problem with this case, and maybe the problem with the standard, seems to me to be that it's virtually impossible to argue this point without getting into a trial within a trial on the merits of the case, i.e., did he kill her? And I'm frankly at a bit of a loss as to how to proceed, but go ahead.
Well, Your Honor, to that point, I'll contrast this case with State v. McKelton, the Supreme Court of Ohio case, where the crime there was a spontaneous killing. And the court looked to the immediate circumstances. Because it was a spontaneous crime, they found no evidence of intent in those circumstances. Then they moved back to look to the broader context, as Giles notes, to look at the history of domestic abuse. And there, that history of domestic abuse supplied that intent. So here, the lower court and the military judge was focusing on, the lower court was proper to focus on the immediate circumstances of the victim's death, which in comparison to McKelton is an alleged premeditated killing. So, and as the lower court noted, if there's a premeditated event, there is inherently built into the evidence of the premeditation, evidence of multiple motives at play. And the lower court noted...
Wait a minute. Why do you say that necessarily is the case, that if there's premeditation, there must be multiple motives?
I'll clarify, Your Honor. It's not that there must be multiple motives. Right. It's that there's...
Because there could be proof beyond a reasonable doubt and beyond that appellant killed Mrs. Becker. But he may not have done it at all because of the prior complaint, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. And I'll point the People v. Peterson, the Illinois case, the defendant killed his wife before an upcoming divorce and custody proceeding. And he argued that the forfeiture by wrongdoing exception did not apply because the overwhelming intent was to come out on top in divorce and custody and gain the assets and custody. But the state was able to point to circumstantial evidence that he did not want his wife to testify at that divorce and custody proceeding because that would have been unfavorable to him. And so that, although overwhelmingly his intent was for gain in the hearing, he also wanted to silence her as a witness. Here we have evidence from his statement in the phone call that he has on his mind the child custody proceedings for his children from his previous marriage. And I'll note in Government Exhibit 58...
But I don't quite understand the connection you're drawing there. You've got this phone call. It's a lengthy one. He talks about how Mrs. Becker caused him to have a living nightmare. His life was a living nightmare. You're talking about the custody issue. But how is that directly tied to the fact that the military judge abused his discretion in concluding that this forfeiture by wrongdoing exception doesn't apply? That's the extremely narrow issue that is in front of us here.
Yes, Your Honor. The government's position is that appellant's statements in that phone call are a window into his subjective intent during that time frame. The military judge, on page 3 of his ruling, said, I find no evidence that the allegation, the prior abuse allegations, were on appellant's mind during the time surrounding her death. That is direct evidence that contradicts that finding. And that was a finding that was determinative to the military judge. So when the lower court can find this evidence that he did not mention or reconcile when he made that statement in his ruling, that shows that there's an abuse of discretion. When the reviewing authorities can look at what's outside the ruling and be firmly convinced that the military judge's findings were made in error, then this court should point out the evidence that the military judge should consider so that the ruling can be completed.
Counsel, none of this feels like, what this feels like is we're just relitigating this issue that was litigated once already before the military judge. There's no mention of the fact ever in the CCA's opinion or in these discussions that the appellant prevailed at trial or that we're really dealing with an abuse of discretion standard here. I mean, you know, we have different ways of articulating that, but we talk about decisions being fanciful, right? I mean, so clearly wrong that even us sitting up here 1,000 miles away and months later know that it was wrong. Like, what is in the record that would tell us that we know the military judges here was wrong, even on a cold record, not seeing these witnesses, not experiencing this evidence, that we could be certain that the military judge truly abused his discretion here?
Your Honor, I'll reiterate that it is primarily his statement to police that she told him she would cause him problems. That is the event that caused him to set in motion the planning efforts. So it's that statement in relation to her abuse allegation in 2013. She reported the abuse in 2013. It caused what appellant described as a living nightmare. And appellant has noted that the military judge made no findings on whether that assault allegation was substantiated. But regardless, the living nightmare occurred nonetheless because of her report. So when she says she can cause him problems, it is unreasonable to assume that she's talking about anything other than reviving that assault allegation. There is evidence, and it's the evidence of the conduct unbecoming charge, that between 2013 and 2015, he was emotionally abusing her and controlling her every move in order to keep her fearful so that she doesn't revive the assault allegation. It's the government's view that he forced her to recant and claim that it was her medication that caused her to misinterpret his actions. So, Your Honor, that's the evidence we point to, and I agree that just this sounds like relitigating the evidence, but it's evidence that the military judge did not consider and needs to consider for this to be a completed ruling, and for the forfeiture by wrongdoing exception
I'm back where Judge Sparks was. Did he not consider it, or did he consider it and reject it? We don't know.
Your Honor,
what you're saying is, I think, that no logic, no rational person would not consider this and say so, I guess. What are you saying?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. And I'll note the posture of this ruling. I see my time is
coming. Go ahead.
This was the military judge's second ruling that he did on remand from the lower court.
Right.
The lower court noted that he applied an impermissibly narrow standard, specifically told him to look to subjective evidence of subjective intent rather than objective intent. The military judge notes that that's the reason for the remand on page 2 of his ruling, and then immediately says, I incorporate all my same findings of fact. On page 2, he says, I'll reiterate the same findings I made in my first ruling. That shows that the military judge did not meaningfully reevaluate the evidence in light of the remand.
Okay, he blew them off.
Well, and how are you making that allegation against the military judge here? It seems to me that with all these things, you are arguing it in the light most favorable to the government. All of these facts. Is that the standard that this court applies?
No, Your Honor.
No.
No. Your Honor. It is not.
Right. But now you're casting aspersions on the military judge, saying, oh, he obviously didn't consider all these things because he simply rubber-stamped what went on before. And I'm just wondering, what factual basis do you have to point to in the record before you make that allegation against the military judge?
Your Honor, I don't mean to cast aspersions on the military judge, and the evidence we have is that he only identified jealousy as a motive when the victim's statement that she could cause him problems and that it was on his mind, the 2013 allegation, is evidence that he intended to prevent her testimony, reviving the 2013 assault allegation. And by failing to consider those facts and consider that in his intent analysis, the military judge abused his discretion.
Judge, I have one last question.
Go ahead.
It seems that if the lower court had an issue with the factual findings, wouldn't it have made sense for them to express that in their remand back to the military judge, as opposed to waiting till he does another resolution of the issue, the government appeals it back up to CCA, only for the CCA to say, aha, you use the right standard now, but, yeah, you got some problems with the facts. We think you ignored some facts. When they're the same facts they reviewed the first time.
Your Honor, the first appeal, the issue presented was one was a legal issue. We asked the lower court whether the military judge applied the wrong legal standard.
I understand that. I understand what the issue was, but the CCA could not have helped but reviewed the findings.
Yes, Your Honor. Our position is they implicitly asked the military judge to open the aperture again on the facts.
Implicitly?
Yes, Your Honor, because they said he applied too narrow of a scope. He had to look for subjective evidence of intent when previously he was looking with an objective lens. That calls the military judge to revisit the evidence, look again, and make
more findings. He did revisit. He looked at his previous facts and said, I've revisited my factual findings, and here's my conclusion. Now that I'm using so-called proper standard.
Your Honor, he may have revisited his previous facts from his ruling, but we don't know that it is apparent that he did not revisit the facts in the record because he didn't include in the second ruling the evidence of appellant's objective intent and the three critical facts that I've identified, Your Honor.
And just to make it clear with the military judge, isn't it true that the military judge ruled that the statement to the hotel clerk by Mrs. Becker and the statements by Mrs. Becker to the responding MP are admissible?
Correct, under the excited utterance exception.
So, again, this indication that the military judge isn't playing straight down the middle here, the fact that he did find that this is not admissible, but he has found other statements related to that assault to be admissible, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Chief Judge, I know I'm over time. If I could briefly conclude.
Yes.
This court should be firmly convinced, based on the critical facts, that the military judge did not consider that his finding is clearly erroneous. This court should remand for completed ruling. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Apparently, the evidence that we're to find the most problem with is the statement that Lieutenant Becker was afraid that his wife was going to cause him problems. You know, I think that you could even cast off the standard of review that says that you're to review this evidence in the light most favorable to Lieutenant Becker. And just the most natural interpretation of that statement, it seems to, I mean, you can look at the police blotter and you know that they had this disagreement over who was going to come into his apartment and move his things. And the reason he's there is because he's afraid that she's going to cause him problems over that. This is a situation that, the government says that he does that to discredit her. Well, first of all, even if that were true, discrediting her isn't the standard here. It's to prevent testimony. And the fact of the matter is that this whole situation.
Discredit versus prevent? I'm sorry, but they seem awful close to each other to me. One of them is, don't listen to this drunk woman. And the other is, don't listen to this drunk woman.
I,
or drunk woman, shut up and don't talk to the police.
Oh, no, Your Honor. I guess the question is, did he cause her absence with that intent?
Well, yeah. That's the question before us.
The most natural understanding of this evidence in any standard, Your Honor, is that that they had this disagreement over who's going to come into the apartment. And what we know from Government Exhibit 19 on page 2, we learned that this disagreement had already been resolved by the 8th. We know that they had already decided that his command was going to come in and help her move. It's also present in the testimony of Mrs. Litchfield on page 67 on the record. And so this kerfuffle over who is going to come help her move, that had already been resolved. It's off the table. So we ask that this court affirm the military judge's finding, restore some modicum of discretion to trial judges, and I stand by for any further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, sir.
Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted, and the court is in recess until 09:30 tomorrow.